Welcome to episode 60 of the Bomber Brothers podcast, part of the Pinstripe Alley community of podcasts. Sean and Ryan here together this time, not virtually.
Breaking all the COVID rules here in the Yankee fan cave.
Yeah, everything's gone virtual over the past few months, but now we're in person for this episode to do another season in review. This time we're talking about 1999, which we talked about this with Peter Bodie, who thought that the 99 team gets a little overlooked because it's right in the middle of a three-peat in between the best team of all time and a Subway Series win in the World Series. So it seems like not a lot of people talk about the 99 team, even though when you look at the numbers and remember what they accomplished, they were a damn good team too.
Yeah, I mean, they won, 98 games? And in the postseason, they only lost one game, and that was to Pedro Martinez in the ALCS. They lost the game pretty badly, but overall, they just rolled through the postseason on their way to protecting the title that they were defending. And still, like, forget the three-peat. It's the last team to go back-to-back in baseball.
Yeah, that's true. And like you said, that this was probably the most dominant postseason we've ever seen the Yankees have. I mean, you look back to 2009 and they never faced elimination, but they still went to six games in the LCS and the World Series. Even the 98 team was trailing in the ALCS at one time. So this Yankees team took even in the one series they lost, they went into that game with a 2-0 series lead. So it just really never felt like the Yankees were in any kind of trouble at all during that postseason.
I agree. I think the only game they lose is to Pedro. And even with losing that game, you know you're not seeing Pedro again unless you Red Sox push it all the way to a game 7. And that just didn't feel very likely with the way the Yankees won two close games against the Red Sox in the ALCS at Yankee Stadium, which we'll get to. And then they just kind of rolled straight to the World Series. A couple underrated World Series games along the way. But, I mean, I think the story for this team isn't just defending the championship from 98, you know, coming off the heels of the greatest team ever, but it's also about what they overcame. And, I mean, the video, like the VHS that MSG put out, was called Champions of the Heart, and this team dealt with a lot of stuff throughout the year.
Yeah, and a big part of that was Joe Torre, who was unable to be in the dugout for the first bit of 1999 because he was dealing with cancer. And you had Don Zimmer as the acting manager, and just another one of those speed bumps that team. You considered it to kind of be a rallying cry, and that was kind of what their mantra was, to do it for Joe. And it wasn't like 98 either, where they get off to a rough start and they have to have a big team meeting. Like, the 99 Yankees just seemed to get it done from opening day to the end of the World Series.
Yeah, they pretty much cruised. They had the usual magic working. And I think they go pretty much wire to wire in the standings. I mean, they get off to a, you know, crazy hot start, starting off, 7-1? And, you know, by the end of May, they're, you know, already 10 games over 500. So pretty dominant year beginning to end. And it starts with Don Zimmer in the dugout threatening to quit after a little while. I think his knee was hurt walking out for all the pitching changes, and Then Torrey convinced them to stick around once Joe got back. And great job by the fans in Fenway. Joe's first game back from the cancer, and he gets a standing ovation when he brings out the lineup card.
And even before the season started, Joe Torrey was meeting Albert Bell because it seemed like Bernie Williams might not even be back with the Yankees. He had just won the batting title and was huge for the Yankees in the postseason, and it looked like he might be on the other side of this rivalry. I mean, how different would that look? Because it seemed like Bernie was close to a deal with Boston, and we'll get to this, but he has a huge moment in the ALCS against Boston. I mean, imagine he's on the other side of the field in the other dugout. That would have obviously been weird as hell, but it also probably would have been hurtful for the Yankees, especially given the year Bernie had, and you'd much rather have him than Albert Bell.
Well, I mean, I think Bernie knew what he was doing in the 98 parade where he said, when they were, you know, chanting for Bernie to stay, and he said, "You got to talk to this guy," and pointed right at George, George Steinbrenner. And I mean, Bernie earned that. What was it? What was he getting? Like $12 million a year with his new contract. Mm-hmm. He earned that with how he had played down, you know, for the Yankees, and deserved to get every dollar he could. And look, Boris was Bernie's agent. Boris knew what he was doing. He knows how to play teams against each other, and I'm sure he knew how to play George Steinbrenner like a fiddle. And watching a guy who just won the batting title from a Red Sox, who had been a key part of two World Series and ending the drought, and pretty much, like, you know, I know we talk about Jeter and the dynasty, but Bernie was really the one that saw it through the dark times and then to the empire. And I think Boris knew that Steinbrenner wouldn't sit for Bernie going to the Red Sox. And I don't think this was a Cashman deal, right? This was a George deal. And, mm-hmm. I think thank God they didn't get Albert Bell, who was, you know, in his prime, a great player, but had, you know, health issues later in his career. And Bernie gets to retire a Yankee, as he should.
And Torrey comes back, like you said, in Fenway, like when the Red Sox were neck and neck with the Yankees, and then they overtake the Yankees because the Yankees had what was really their only quote unquote rough stretch of the season, 11-9 over 20 games, and they fall into second place. And then in early June, they take first place back and never give it up, and there really wasn't much drama after that. And we didn't even... Before, I guess we got to backtrack again because we're talking about moves. The Yankees grab Roger Clemens, and that was like when pitchers and catchers had reported. It was pretty early on in spring training, and then all of a sudden David Wells is gone, and here comes Roger Clemens, who Yankees were used to having on the opposite side of the rivalry.
Throwing at them.
Yeah. and now they have Clemens, and you lose kind of a fan favorite in Wells, who was so huge in the postseason. I remember not really knowing how to feel about this, because as a kid you heard how good Roger Clemens was, but for us we had just seen David Wells throw a perfect game and be one of the best postseason pitchers the Yankees have had in a while, so it was weird.
For sure. I mean, I was upset about it. You know, Clemens was a Red Sox, and he had hit Brocious the year before, I'm pretty sure, and after Brocious tagged him for quite a few hits at a game up in Toronto the year before. And, you know, it just going from Wells to a guy like that was kind of scary. But Clemens winds up, you know, we talked about it in 2003, becoming one of the Yankees that you really come to root for because of his tenacity. Now, he doesn't do great in 1999, excuse me. He's got to get his Royd guy over to the Yankees before he can start playing well. But he does wind up finishing the season on a nice note, starting the last game of the World Series. But, I mean, he pitches to a 4.6 ERA in 1999. And his FIP is, you know, 4.36. His WHIP is 1.5. So not a tremendous year for Clemens by any stretch of the imagination. But he'd get what he needs coming up soon.
Yeah. And is there any other regular season moments that stand out other than obviously the big one that we'll get to involving
Cone,
another Yankee pitcher.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, one of the big things that stands out was they had a few walk-offs that year. I think Brocious had a nice walk-off against the Orioles in 99. And the Subway Series against the Mets, I know we went to a game that they lost, and the next day was a crazy loss. So that was when the Subway Series really, I think, picked up steam, because the Mets were good in 99. They had gotten Piazza in 98. You know, they had guys like John Olerud. And I think this was really the start of, like, the build-up to the 2000 World Series, because they played a lot of good games against the Mets in 1999. Was 99 the year Jeter had that crazy on-base streak?
Yeah, 57 games in a row where he reached base.
So, yeah.
Yeah, the game we were at Shea, didn't Piazza hit, like, a monster home run to dead center?
Yeah, it got out of there in a hurry. And then I think Olerud hit one off of Clemens as well. I think it was two homers for the Mets in that game. And Benito struck Tino out, and I wanted Tino to get some revenge in that game so bad. And Dad cheered at a game for the first time for Chili Davis.
That's right, yep. Still one of the only times we've heard... Well, no, he returned to form in the 2017 wild card game when Didi hit the home run.
Yeah, he's come out of his shell recently.
All right, so then we get to July. It's just before the Yankees are about to go on a pretty dominant stretch to pad their division lead, and it's helped along by David Cohn, who was I thought was easily the Yankees' best pitcher in 1999, and was certainly the best pitcher in the world on July 18th, which was a cool birthday present for myself. The day before my birthday, watching David Cohn pitch a perfect game. And I'm trying to think of who made the last out now.
Wasn't it Orlando Cabrera?
I think so.
I think.
But there were a couple of close calls. You had the nice play by Knobloch, which Cohn said he thought was, which he told us when we talked to him for when his book Full Count came out, that, you know, Knobloch, who was about to start having fits with the yips, that was that hard hit ball that Knobloch made to his backhand side and thought that the perfect game was over right then and there. And instead, Knobloch makes a nice play. And I feel like in any perfect game, there's always that one play where you think it's over and you just have to get a little fortunate. And Cohn got it there thanks to Knobloch.
Well, I mean, I remember when the ball. I remember watching the game at home with everybody, and when the balls hit the Knobloch, we were all like, "Oh no!" Because it was pretty apparent that he was having throwing issues, and he makes the play, and that's the Lede play was in this game, not the Wells game, right?
So Cohn's perfect game was the Lede play. Yeah. That's when he like lost it in the sun.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But I thought it was pretty telling, because you could tell Lede loses the ball for a second when you're watching it back. But Cohn was more nervous when the ball was hit to Knobloch, and I appreciated his honesty there. Not throwing Knobloch under the bus, but it was just apparent with what Knobloch was dealing with. And he makes the play, to his credit, except for a World Series or postseason game on the line. The most pressure you could experience, I'm sure, as a fielder is preserving a perfect game. And he makes the play, and, you know, I think there's, like, after the perfect game, there's, like, this narrative that Cohn doesn't pitch as well. He doesn't get wins, but he still finishes the year at a 3.44 ERA, and like you said, the most valuable pitcher the Yankees have that year.
Yeah, like you mentioned, Clemens had his struggles in his first year in New York. It was certainly a down year for Pettit for his standards. Didn't get much regular season-wise in terms of ERA from El Duque. Of course, he usually shows up in the postseason, which is what mattered most for these Yankee teams that knew they were going to be in the postseason anyway. So the rotation wasn't exactly overwhelming like it was in 98 when you had David Wells starting the All-Star game. So it was certainly not... Like, it certainly wasn't the rotation that it was a year ago, but they got the job done because they still had an awesome offense. Like, Bernie comes back after you thought he could possibly leave. He bats 342. Jeter has probably the best season of his career. His OPS was just under 1,000. He led the league in hits. I think he had 219 hits. Let's see, 153 OPS plus. The next, yeah, Jeter with a 153 OPS plus, Bernie with a 149, and then the next highest is 118, and that was Knobloch. So Jeter and Bernie were a two-headed monster for the Yankees in the lineup.
I mean, and when you have Knobloch with, you know, a 393 on base at the top of the lineup right before those guys, and good things happen.
That's right, and good things did happen. They won. Yeah. They won the division. I think the Red Sox got it to like three games or something like that, heading down the stretch. But it really was never too much in doubt. The Yankees kept them at arm's length most of the way, and then they head into the division series against the Rangers, who were our childhood's version of the Twins now, where they just continuously ran into the Yankees in the first round and just got completely shut down offensively. I mean, it's pretty crazy just to think about. In 98 they scored one run the whole series, I believe.
I'm not sure.
And then they only scored one run in this series as well. And like I mentioned before, El Duque had his struggles in the postseason, in the regular season, as did Pettit and Clemens, and they all come out in the playoffs, and it's like they flipped a switch. El Duque pitches a shutout, so does Clemens in the clinching game three, and then Pettit pitches a great game in game two, and Moe's there to save the last two games. But they start the playoffs off with a bang, with a big 8-0 win that was actually a pretty close pitcher's duel early on before the offense came to life in the middle innings.
Yeah, and I mean, that's pretty much the MO for the Yankees, right? Is just stay in the game until you get into their starter tired or get into their bullpen and have your pitching just hold them down until that point. And, you know, we were talking about him earlier, and we're going to talk about him in the ALCS, but Bernie is Bernie in this round. I mean, Bernie hits over 350 in the division series, has six ribbies, does what Bernie does. And it's pretty amazing to have a guy that just consistently keeps coming up time after time again in the postseason. And 99 proves no different. Bernie was a beast in 96. 98 had some big hits. And then 99, the beat goes on. And, you know, another thing that we were talking about the rotation, I think 99 is a turning point for Andy Pettit, because he pitches great in game two. Now, Andy Pettit's known for being a good postseason pitcher, but there was some talk of him getting traded, and I believe Stottlemyre and Torrey both like said they would quit if they traded Andy Pettit or something like that. There was some sort of big thing that went down in the middle of the year, and when Steinbrenner wanted to trade Andy, excuse me, and then after they refused, he kind of settled down and started to pitch better. Obviously, has a good year in 2000 and so on. But, you know, we get to the division series, and Pettit goes out and pitches well. And that's what we're used to from Andy.
Yeah, he pitched a great game in game two. Though, for a while, the Yankees were losing that game. It was 1-0. And then they got a big hit from, I think, Chili Davis. Yeah, Chili Davis had a big hit, and the Yankees score a big insurance run in the eighth. And then by that time, Moe comes in, and then you know it's over. And then they're up 2-0, and then they close it out in game three, thanks to Clemens, who you finally kind of start to see, you know, why the Yankees made this trade and got rid of a pitcher and David Wells, who you were used to seeing have these dominant postseason starts.
Yeah, kind of fitting first postseason start in Texas for Clemens, who's Mr. Texas. And Yankees waste no time, jump out ahead. And the losing pitcher was Esteban Loaiza, who we would see rear his ugly head in Yankee history later in the next decade. But, Clemens does what he was brought here to do. Now, 99 ALCS doesn't go as well for Roger, but
no,
he does have that sandwiched around two shutouts. So right, he Yankees won Game 4-0 in 99.
I think yeah.
All right. So good stuff from the Rocket Man.
Yeah, you mentioned Loaiza, and then who closed or finished that game for the Rangers? John Wetland. Who we don't need to talk about.
Yeah. But then they, I remember watching, and it felt weird rooting for the Red Sox to win the other series, because you wanted a Yankee-Red Sox ALCS.
Yep.
And we got it.
And the Red Sox, they were down 2-0 in that series.
Yeah, they were down 2-0, and then they went crazy at Fenway, and, you know, the game was tied, like, what, 8-8 in the third inning? In yeah, Game 5, and they brought Pedro in. And, the rest is history.
Yeah, I mean, this is right around where Pedro is reaching his peak. He's about to have that ridiculous year in 2000 and still the best starting pitcher I've ever seen when he was at his peak, and this was certainly it. So seeing him come out of the bullpen and shut it down, and then you know you have a Yankees-Red Sox series. And then this was setting up the stage for our first postseason game that we ever went to, which was Game 2. And didn't we find out we were going during Game 1 when we were watching it on TV?
So yeah, we were watching Game 1 on TV, and Dad told us like in the first inning that we can't watch the whole game because we have to go to bed early, and we're complaining. And well, Dad said, well, it's because we're not going to be watching the game here tomorrow night, and we all went nuts because we knew what that meant. But he's like, I didn't even say where we're going yet. We could be going to Uncle Rob's. I remember he said that. And we're like, why would we go watch the game at Uncle Rob's house?
Yeah, and then
he
showed us Mets fan.
And then he showed us the tickets, and we went. And I remember he was like, well, you better hope that they turn this one around. Because while we were all going nuts, you got Jeter making an error on a ball. And then Brian Daubeck getting a hit to put the Red Sox up 2-0 at that point. And the Red Sox went on stretching lead to 3-0. But Scott Brosius shows in that an inning or two later that 99 was no fluke, and he goes yard against Kent Merker.
Yeah, some of the names on this 99 Red Sox team are interesting ones.
Yeah, and, you know, so it's 3-2 from basically bottom of the second to the bottom of the seventh, and the Yankees are still losing this game 3-2. El Duque holds them in the game, and, you know, Brocious again gets things started with a single to left in the seventh. Knobloch does, you know, lays down a bunt like he should.
Yep.
And Jeter is Jeter, and he comes up and he ties the game with a single, which gets overlooked, I feel like, in the game because, you know, you get to the bottom of the 10th inning and the first batter is Bernie Williams, and for the second time in his career, in the first game of the ALCS, he hits a walk-off home run. And I think that's such a crazy thing. Like, the first game of a series, to go to the World Series is so important, and Bernie has two walk-off home runs in those games.
Yeah, I also remember what stands out about that home run is Rod Beck pitching, and just looks like the most, like, Blue Haywood from Major League. He, like, has that, like, big mustache and like the long hair hanging out of the back of his head, and he's like furiously chewing on his gum, like he's Blue Haywood if he were a pitcher. But it's not like Bernie really could get his arms extended on that walk off. It was kind of inside. How he managed to hit that over the wall in dead center is pretty impressive. But he did, and it gave the Yankees a series lead, so then it felt a lot better going to the game the next night, and then we get to see another really good game in Game 2.
Yeah, I mean, Game 2 was a really good game. Cone against Ramon Martinez, and just going to our first postseason game was awesome, and then to get such a great game was crazy. It was our first time experiencing the postseason at Yankee Stadium, and I think it was the fourth inning Tino went deep, so obviously that was the first Yankee home run we had ever seen.
Yep.
This was our fourth game going, and no Yankee had ever went deep, and Tino went yard, and That was great. But then Nomar goes deep, I think, in the bottom of the inning. It's a two-run shot, and the Yankees are losing the game 2-1, even though Cone is striking out pretty much everybody. I remember he had a ton of Ks that game. But the Yankee, you know, Cone holds it close. The Yankees don't score for a while, and then you get to the bottom of the seventh, bottom of the eighth.
The seventh, when Knobloch gets the big hit.
Yeah, and I mean, it starts, you know, with what? A walk? Or,
I think it was a walk.
I don't remember how the rally starts, but they get going. Knobloch hits a double down the corner, steals third, Jeter walks, and then O'Neill, lefty on lefty, playing with a broken rib, drives in the go-ahead run with a little bloop O'Neill hit over the shortstop hole, over the shortstop's head. And I remember in the bottom of the eighth, the Red Sox loaded the bases and the Yanks got out of it. And Mo ran into a little trouble in the ninth, but got the K to win the game.
Yep, and I still remember walking out of the stadium and just, like, thinking about how cool it was, like, what we just got to see, and just also feeling like that the series was over and that the Yankees were going to the World Series.
And yeah, the next day didn't go great. No. Or the 2 days later, because they had the off day in between.
I still remember our grandfather, who's a huge Red Sox fan. I think he still has the newspaper clipping from that game on his wall in his basement, with, like, Clemens just, like, keeled over on the mound, and, like, the Green Monster scoreboard in the background just, like, showing all the runs that they put up on him. That was an all-time blowout.
Yeah, but again, up until 2004, that's really the best moment the Red Sox have, between Fisk's home run and 2004. Yeah. So congrats, you lost the series 4-1. But then they get down to business the next night in Game 4. Andy goes out, gives up 2 runs and 7 1/3. And Game 4 is a really close game. You know, Mariano's got to get out of a jam in the eighth.
Yeah, and then the offense certainly rewards him after that.
Yeah, I think Ricky LeDay hit a grand slam, right? Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
I can't remember. Oh, yeah, yes, he does, yeah. Oh, yeah, because it was off of Rod Beck again.
Yeah, tough series, buddy.
Yeah, not the best series for Rod Beck.
And Darryl Strawberry hits his second home run of the postseason, a year after missing the postseason with cancer. This one off Brett Sabre.
Off the pole, right?
Yeah. I remember Grandpa Chick went with us to the ALCS game, too, that we were talking about. And he told me that if Darryl got a hold of one, he would hit it off the Utz Pretzel sign that was, you know, behind us. And Strawberry, I think, struck out 3 or 4 times that game. And I remember saying to him on the ride home, you know, you were wrong. And he goes, well, he never got a hold of one. So it's all right.
Well, he got a hold of one in Fenway.
Fair enough.
Well, and then the Yankees take care of business in Game 5. They put up 2 runs in the first inning, and El Duque completely shuts down Boston, continues his aura of being a dominant postseason pitcher, and the Yankees go to the World Series.
That's it. That's the play with the phantom tag, right? The Knobloch doesn't tag the runner, and then they threw all the garbage on the field. Yeah. Oh, I mean, come on. You're getting crushed. Who cares?
Jeter started that game with a 2-run homer, right? Because Knobloch led off, and he got on base, and then Jeter hit the home run.
Yeah, and I think Posada hit one in the ninth.
And that set the tone for the clinching game. Then the Yankees go back to the World Series, and a familiar foe is waiting.
The battle for the team of the century.
Yeah.
Team of the decade, sorry. Team of the decade.
Team of the decade.
Team of the century was cemented back in, like, 1940.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the battle for the team of the decade. And, I think it's pretty apparent it's the Yankees. The Braves have a lot of regular season success, but the Yankees win 3 championships, 2 of them against Atlanta, stopping them in their tracks. And one of them in crazy fashion, and the other one in dominant fashion. So, you know, game one is El Duque again, and gives up the solo shot to Chipper. In one of the more underrated World Series games, the Yankees are losing 1-0 in the eighth inning and put together a 4-run rally. Off all sorts of weird stuff. I think Rocker comes in and walks in a run at one point. Maddux starts this game, and he's not as sharp in the eighth inning. I think he walks Darryl Strawberry, which Maddux to walk anybody is pretty rare. But, again, Brocious with a three-hit night, and his single in the eighth inning starts that rally.
Yeah, and then you had the Jeter single. You had
Tino got a hit that
inning. Tino got a hit. Maddux making an error. No, not Maddux. Sorry. I think it was Klesko who made an error.
And yeah, the ball pops out of the fielder's hand. Yeah. On the bunt. Yep.
And then, so the Yankees take, like you said, a kind of overlooked game one, which was really exciting. And then you had a not-so-exciting game two when the Yankees just completely dominated and started this series on the road because the Braves won 103 games.
Well, that's
and
not
the National
why.
League back, won yeah. the All-Star game.
Well, no, back then they used to just flip-flop. It would be
oh, that's
AL,
right,
AL,
yeah.
AL-NL, so it was the NL's year. And they didn't go to the All-Star game thing until I think it was 2002 or 2003.
This one counts.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was whatever year ended in a tie, which I don't care. It's an exhibition game, but that was a big uproar, so they had to change all that. So, yeah, they win game two rather easily. David Cohn pitches a nice game, gets his last World Series win of his career, and then they go back to Yankee Stadium, and Andy Pett doesn't have it at Yankee Stadium.
No.
Kind of gives up quite a few runs, but the Yankees hit a bunch of solo shots off of Glavine, I feel like, and kind of get back into the lead, and the bullpen does a really good job of keeping things close. And I think in one of the weirder moments in World Series, Yankee moments, who was it? Brian Jordan goes back on that now block ball. And really, the ball hits off Brian Jordan's glove and goes into the short porch.
The most Yankee Stadium home run you could have.
And, so a little help from the Braves there. Tino hit a homer that game. I know that. And Curtis had hit one earlier in the game. It was not known for hitting home runs. Apparently tells Brocious he wants to hit one that counts, and he comes up in the extra innings and ends the game.
Yeah, certainly hit one that counts there.
Yeah.
Yeah, he had a good bat flip, too.
Yeah, the little flip.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was pretty disgusting listening to the 99 World Series video, and he says that after he
hit
the home run, the teammates said that they were glad it happened to him because he was a good guy, and just think about what happens with him, and he is not a good guy. But, you know, sometimes you just don't know somebody, and it's sad that there's a couple of the Yankee dynasty guys that it's really hard to watch their highlights back, and you look at it kind of with your eyes, you know, slanted or whatever, and he had a weird interview afterwards too. Remember, I think Jim Gray comes up to him and wanted to talk to him, and he's like, "No, we're not going to talk to you guys because of the way you treated Pete Rose at the All Century thing. But this one's for you, Grandma." He said something crazy like that. But Yanks are up 3-0, and Rocket Man's on the mound for Game Four. And I mean, at this point, it's just the fans had put it had said 24 World Series champs on in the upper deck. The fans already pasted over that with like 25, and
yep.
I remember Bob Costa said, hopefully not prematurely, but I mean, it was just, it was just a matter of time at that point.
Yeah, obviously this was a good game for us. Tino and Jeter both had big hits.
Did they give Tino a hit on that? Because that was really a ball Klesko should have fielded.
Yeah, that's no, right they gave him the hit though.
Well, nice.
And like you said, it was a redemption game for Clemens, who had struggled for most of the year, especially in the ALCS, but he goes 7 2/3 and only allows one run, four hits. And then the Yankees are champs again, like you said, back-to-back. And then, obviously, we become a three-peat, but still the last team to win consecutive World Series.
It's crazy when you look at these games how long the starters stay in. Like, I was watching, and I remember Clemens, he tweaked his hamstring going to cover first, and then he gave up the hit to give up the run. But it's like he's pitching in the eighth inning, and they're still like, okay, yeah, maybe you could stay in and pitch through this. It's crazy. You never see that anymore.
No, yeah, definitely
but,
not.
You know, I think a thing about this team, too, is they understood how to chip away with the way they have that rally in the third. And then, obviously, Leiritz is the home run in the eighth, the last home run of the century, just Leiritz being Leiritz in the postseason. But, I mean, to win the two World Series against the Braves, they beat their two best pitchers, I think, in John Smoltz and Greg Maddux, and then beat their third best pitcher in crucial swing games. Both in Game 3, they beat Glavine both years. And it's pretty incredible what they're able to do against those pitchers. And the Yankees do their job and take care of business. And Mo pitches one and a third. No runs, no walks, no hits, no sweat, as they say. And
that'll secure an MVP.
Yep. Remember he broke, I think it was Klesko he faced, and he broke his bat like 14 times in the same at-bat.
Yeah.
Something weird.
Like I think that whole chair that, who was it, the Twins?
It was Klesko's bats.
I think it was just all Klesko's.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. And then that was it. They're the champions again, like you said. Back-to-back, a belly-to-belly. And this one gets overlooked because 98 was so special for the greatest team ever. 2000 is the Subway Series. But this team was a really good team that overcame a lot. I mean, Paul O'Neill's dad dies the day before Game 4, or the morning of Game 4, and he goes out and plays, and pretty incredible. And that's it.
Number 25. Yeah, number 25. Is number 26 the only one left?
Yeah, I don't want to really talk about it. I mean, you know, honestly, of all the years we've done, I'd probably slot 2019 ahead of a couple of them. Like 2012, I put 2019 ahead of, and 2007. But we talked about that all
that
year.
That was literally last year.
Yeah. So I'm kind of just figuring 2000 is the last one we'll talk about. And then we'll have to find some sort of new topic to discuss.
Well, we can do that. Yeah. Luckily, we'll have an extra week to think about it because, like we said, next week we'll be back to talk about 2000, the first time in this series that we're going to go consecutive years and back-to-back weeks, but it's really the only notable one left, so that's what we're going to do. And thanks to everyone for listening to this one, and we'll be back next time to talk about 2000.
See you later, everybody.